Thank you. All right, good morning, gang. Well, as many of you know, we've got some big things coming up. There's even more, you know, to it, more exciting things that's been happening. But the gist of it is, if you're new, we are going to be entering into a 21-day fast in May, along with many in the state of Colorado, along with many in the globe, fasting and praying for Israel, for the Jews to turn to their Messiah and be saved. And so there's a lot going on with that, and I know there's a lot to talk about, but we're not going to talk about it today. If you're new to this, you're saying, what is happening? I would encourage you to listen to both the messages from 3 weeks ago and 2 weeks ago, and that'll help you out a ton. And we will do more on it, but we want to address something to the church family this morning that we feel is very important in preparing us for what we feel like the Lord wants to do in May. And so with that in mind, Erica, if you could make your way up here, and Jess, wherever that mic is, Erica's going to need it, the one you used. So back there in the sound booth, thanks. Go ahead and open up your Bibles to Romans 12, and then pull out your notes. We're going to look at the command to honor this morning. So at the beginning of the year, we had a staff meeting concerning the resolution that we had collectively felt, changes, organizational changes, and things we wanted to do as a church family. And during that staff meeting, Erica shared a vision that she had during a time of prayer on Monday morning. Was it Monday morning? Now I'm putting words in your mouth.
You said a Friday night.
It was a prayer meeting. And this word, when she spoke it to us, it really resonated with our elder team. And it said, I think this is, you know, we get a lot of encouragements all the time. And this one really hit us as something we wanted to look at and spend time on. So I want Erica to share it. And then I'm going to go into a little bit of notes and just some reflective time on this. Because I do really feel like this is the Lord saying, I'm bringing increase, restoration. We're going to see some changes. Stuff's going to happen. And I want to get your heart right in a couple areas. So, Erica, why don't you share what you saw and felt?
Yeah, I was just praying for the church and for the leadership, and I felt like I saw a picture. I saw a crack going through the center of this auditorium in the foundation, and I asked the Lord what it was. And I felt like he said, it's dishonor. And what I could kind of perceive from that is that it's not something that just recently happened, but it's something that's in the foundation of the church and that maybe has been a part of this church for a long time. And then I also got one phrase that said, dishonor breeds distrust, which if unattended breeds disunity and division, confusion and disillusionment. And just wanted to share that with the leadership. And so that is the vision.
All right. So when we receive what we'd call prophetic insight from the Lord, there's kind of three ways to handle it. One is you say, what was seen or felt? And Erica just shared that. And then secondly, you say, how are we to interpret this? What is the Lord trying to say? And then when you have arrived at how you're supposed to interpret, then you apply that interpretation. How are we supposed to respond? Okay, so I want to try to give interpretation this morning and then ask you to respond if you feel like the interpretation resonates. So as I said before, I believe this is a word for this house because of what the Lord's doing, because of where we're going and what's happening. And I want to start with a heart posture on your notes, or Roman numeral 1 heart posture. And I want to say your heart posture. We're going to talk about honor and dishonor. And if you're going, finally, all the people who have dishonored me are going to come to me and apologize. That you're already starting out in the wrong area here. We want you to say, have I dishonored? Have I done this? So this is our heart posture of saying, the Lord has spoken a word saying, I believe, or we believe that he said there's dishonor. And it's a root thing. It's been happening for a long time. We're functioning in it. And we want to examine our own hearts rather than sit there and think, man, I hope Billy's hearing this. And if you're Billy in the room, it's not you. I hope Billy's hearing this and he comes and apologizes. If you're taking that stance, you're already missing what the Lord's trying to say. So culture versus truth. This is important to bring up as we kind of look at this idea. Roman numeral 2. As we address this issue and pursue the command to honor one another here at Restoration, we have to understand that there's a vast difference between biblical honor and dishonor and cultural honor and dishonor. And here's a couple differences. In our culture, it's considered dishonoring in general to speak any form of negative criticism concerning another person or entity. It's considered virtuous and honorable to keep our observations and convictions of error or wrong things to ourselves. That's kind of considered in our culture. If somebody says, hey, you're really messing up in this area, we go, I've been dishonored. Okay, that's culture, says that, you know, someone looks at you and says, I want to bring some criticism, and a lot of times if it's criticism, that doesn't make you feel good. If it makes you feel like you failed or makes you feel like you're missing the mark, you feel dishonored. And they have, in our culture, dishonored you. That is not biblical dishonor. It's not what we're talking about today. The honor, the idea of honor or dishonor, is a heart posture that you carry when you're addressing something. Okay? Whether you're bringing criticism to something to be improved upon, the way you view, it's something carried in your heart of a reverence or an attitude or a place in your heart that you view the person you're talking to with honor and you address them with honor. So I like to look at a couple things. Honor biblically is generally something that's given by grace. Something that is unmerited, something that the Lord just says, you will honor this, and so you do. Where in our culture, honor is given if it's merited, if people deserve it. Right? And so, I'll honor them when they deserve it, and then as soon as they don't, I'll dishonor them. I'll say, I think what they're wanting me to do is dumb, and so I'm not going to do it. Right? That's kind of cultural. It's kind of earned, and if that person walks enough in your approval, pretty soon you'll start honoring them. Yeah, that's cultural. Biblically, honor is a grace given. It's saying, hey, you don't deserve to be treated this way, but because there is honor placed on you, because there's weight placed on you, I am going to honor you, even though you have weaknesses and errors. All right? So, biblical examination here. Letter A, and we have to get this right up front, that honor is supernatural love. Honor is not something, biblically, honor is not something that you can do without supernatural empowerment from God. And that's an interesting thing to think about. The theme of honor is spoken in the Bible over 350 times as a character trait or attitude that is godly and or holy. The fact means that to practice walking in an attitude or action of dishonor is to walk in sin. I'll say that again. To walk in dishonor, then, so if honor is a godly thing, if something that we do that's godly in character, and something that belongs to the Lord, to walk in the opposite of that is to walk in ungodliness, or to partner with darkness. This also indicates, and I underline this so we could think about it, we need the supernatural power of the Spirit in us to actually cause us to have honor for one another internally and to express it rightly outwardly. In other words, our stance should say, Lord, unless you help me, I cannot honor this person. I can't grit my teeth enough. Write it down. You will honor. I actually need you to do a work inside me that's real. Okay? And I need you. Like, I can't do it. So let's look at this idea. Psalm 8. And all I'm doing here, I told you to turn to Romans 12. So let's address that first. Here's kind of our premise verse. Romans 12, verse 10. It's a command to the body of Christ, all of them. And Paul says this, love one another with brotherly affection and outdo one another in showing honor. To everybody here, like if we were to receive this letter, the exhortation is to love one another with brotherly affection and then to outdo one another in showing honor. Psalm 8, where I want to start is with this idea that God, this is God's idea, and God's the one who shows us how to honor. He's the one that does it. We're just looking at that characteristic that he's trying to put in our hearts, say we want to walk in that. Psalm 8, verse 3 through 5. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you've set in place, what is man that you're mindful of him? And what is the son of man that you care for him? You've made him a little lower than the heavenly beings. And the idea is, and yet crowned him with glory and honor. The whole premise here is that the psalmist is looking at humanity and saying, of all the things that God has created, the heavenly hosts and all of creation and the angels themselves, he's placed honor on man. Again, by merit, just said, we'll honor. Psalm 91, 15 through 16. And the Lord did it. The Lord was the first one that came up with honor. He put honor on humanity when he created them. Psalm 91, 15 through 16. He calls to me, I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I'll rescue him and honor him. With life long, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. So again, the Lord says, I will honor. I will do this. Honor's my idea. John 12, 26. Jesus said, if anyone serves me, he must follow me. And where I am, there my servant will be also. If anyone serves me, the Father will honor him. Again, it's just clear this is a godly trait, something that God does. Letter B. So three different words here, translated honor. In the Old Testament, there's only one. Every time you see the word honor in the Bible in the Old Testament, it's this word right here. Not going to try to pronounce it because I will not do well. I don't know Hebrew. But there it is for you. Kabod. It's probably not how you say it, but that's what it looks like. To make heavy. Or to bring weight to a person or thing. For example, the one we all kind of know, Deuteronomy 5:16, one of the Ten Commandments. One of the commands is to honor your father and mother. It's one of the Ten Commandments. And the word used is make heavy or bring weight to your honor, or your father or mother. Psalm 66. Here's a great example. Psalm 66. Let's look at verse 2. In the ESV, it says, sing the glory of his name and give him glorious praise. The word used there is to sing the glory of his name. The word is to bring honor, kabod. Sing honor to his name, okay? How do we do that? Look at verse 3. Sing, how awesome are your deeds. How great is your power? Look at verse, keep going down. How awesome is his deeds for the children of men. For he turned the sea into dry land. They passed through the river on foot. He rules by his might forever. So the idea is, let's bring weight. Let's put into perspective God and sing about it. Well, he is mighty. He controls the seas. He watches out for us. And in doing that, in recognizing those things, we're bringing weight or placing reverence upon him. Does that make sense? Okay? So this is, the psalmist is saying, stir up honor and think about who he is and what he's like and proclaim it and build honor by doing that. Let's go ahead and flip the page. In the New Testament, there's two different words. They're both translated honor, so you might not know the difference unless you were looking up the original Greek. But it's fairly simple. One word means to fix a value or reverence upon a thing. And so that's the word timeo. And it says, I want you to honor. And the idea is, find out what this is worth. Look at something, examine it, and say, what's it worth? That's timeo, that's bringing honor. The other word translated honor is time, to pay the value. So you fix the honor, that's honor, and then you honor it. You pay the value that it's due. Okay, so they're used in a couple different places. Let's look at to fix the value, where that's used in a few times in the New Testament, multiple times. But here's the ones I like. Matthew 27, verse 9. If we want to look there. Says, it was fulfilled what has been spoken by the prophet Jeremiah, saying, and they took 30 pieces of silver, the price of him on whom a price had been set. That's the idea. So they said, if you, and the idea here is that they paid a rent, you know, for to betray Jesus, 30 pieces of silver. For the potter's field. He's buying land in the context. And this is prophesied that there would be a value set on land and people would buy it. This is the word timeo, a value set. They assessed and said, this land is worth this. And in doing so, that's the word honor. They honored the land. They set the right value on it. All right? Mark 7, verse 6. And he said to them, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, as it is written, these people honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. So they've said, we've set a value on you with our lips, but they're not paying it. Right? There's a difference between what they say and the actual value they put on it. And here's where I'm going, guys. This really is, and this is a great example, this really is about our heart posture, not about what we say. It's about how we view. John 5, 23. The Father, it's His will in John 5, 23, that all would honor the Son. Just as they honor the Father. Whoever does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. Now, what's interesting here is the idea Jesus actually uses the word timeo, and he's looking at those religious leaders of that day, and he says, this is the will of my Father, that when you look at me, that you would place the same exact value or weight that you do on my Father. He's making a clear proclamation here of his full deity and his full understanding of who he is in his identity as God and saying, it's the will of my Father that all of you would understand, that you would honor me as God, just as you honor my Father as God. Place the same weight. Then it's the next thing is to pay the value. So once you assess the weight, then you pay it. For example, be kindly affectionate to one another, in honor, giving preference to one another. This is our Romans 12 passage. This is the word they use. So in the Romans letter, he's saying, I want you to understand the assessed weight upon all the people in the church, right? And then outdo each other in paying the value seen in everyone. 1 Peter 2:7. Let's look at this one. 1 Peter 2:6 will give us the right idea here. For as it stands in Scripture, behold, I'm laying in Zion a stone, a cornerstone chosen and precious, and whoever believes in him will not be put to shame. So honor is for you who believe, but for those who do not believe, that stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. Now here's what he's saying. He's saying in Scripture, in the prophetic Scriptures about Jesus, it's saying that he is a precious and chosen cornerstone on which everything will be built. Here's the problem, though, Peter says. For those who believe that, they place that weight upon him. And for those that don't, they reject that cornerstone. Does that make sense? So he's saying they don't pay it. They dishonor it. They throw that away. They don't place any value on the cornerstone. But for those that value him as the cornerstone of everything, they place that weight upon him. So see, the place where the theme of honor is used most in the Scriptures is our response and in our heart, is our response to God the Father, to the Son, and in response to one another in recognition and giving proper weight to our uniqueness in calling, gifting, and grace. So all the places that you'll see this, in two primary places, is having the right value set upon God the Father and the Son, and then giving due reverence to that, and having right value set on one another, and giving right payment to that. So we look at this word, and if we kind of take the scriptural, you know, structure of this, and say the Lord spoke, we believe it was a word for the corporate body, not just for Erica, and said, there is a dishonor, there's a culture, there's a thing at Restoration Fellowship that's holding you back. I want to address it. And it's this theme that you are not revering one another rightly. You're not honoring one another rightly. And because you're not honoring one another the right way, you don't give the proper, you know, respect or weight due to one another. And when you don't do that, you do what? You dishonor. And a schism, a crack, factions begin to start. I want to look at a few verses here, but just considering this, I want to go to now personal introspection, and we'll bring it into a few categories. Now, I want to put out before we put into this, as we've prayed about this, and we've, when I say we, mostly our elder team and our leaders, we've said, Lord, show us where dishonor is happening. Would you reveal this so we can call it out in one another and correct it? And we believe he's revealed two areas to us. Now, if these areas resonate with you, great. If not, maybe for, you know, I don't want to make it that bad. We have decided what it means. Here's the two ways it means. I don't want to be that presumptuous, but I do want to say these two ways really resonated with us as we looked at this and prayed about it. And again, I want to be clear, our heart posture right now is, have I done this? Am I walking in this? Not, has this happened to me? Okay, I'll address, has this happened to me in a minute. So as we prayed through this word in our staff meetings, in our elder meetings, we feel strongly that there's two main areas of dishonor that we want to put before you guys and just say, we think this exists here in these two areas. Fully examine and respond according to the leading of the Spirit. So one we noticed was a kind of a theme of dishonor among the generations here. We believe there's a pattern within our church family of placing a greater value on whatever generation we're a part of and devaluing the other. We see this mostly existing between the 40s and younger and the 50s or older. Now, just don't be so black and white. I'm just saying there seems to be a kind of a gap, a schism. And here's where it exists, is that there's this, they're just the old guys. Those old guys, those old people, or those young people, those punks, right? They're just young people. And because we kind of already look at them and just we don't place the right weight on them because we already have this kind of grouped, they have a problem, a weakness, because they're in this certain group. So here's what a few things that I want to look at in Scripture to make us understand that this is very common. This is a common place of dishonor in culture, that there's dishonor among the generations. And let's look at a few of these. In Job 12, verse 12. Job says this, that wisdom is with the aged and understanding in lengths of days. So as we look at the older crowd, we would say, the weight, the honor that I want to place on them is they have understanding because of their length of days, and they have wisdom to offer me. I want to place that weight on them, and when they talk and when they interact, I want to receive it that way. I want to honor them. Okay? Rather than this old crowd are just not useful in their thinkings. They're all dinosaurs. They don't know how to do Google. Okay? They have wisdom. They have understanding because of the length of days. They have life experiences that the younger generation has not had. And they have such strength to offer if you'll honor them. Now look at Proverbs 20, verse 29. The glory or the honor of a young man is their strength. But the splendor or the honor of the old man is the gray hair. Here it is. We have all of this strength. The young people have a lot of drive. They have a lot of vision. They're going to go for it. And this old crowd is going, stop. You don't even know what you're doing. Just shut it down. You're not old enough. You don't get it. You can't do it right, so just stop. They're not honoring the fact that young people have strength. They're supposed to run. You're tired. You've had your length of days. And so you're to give them room to run, to celebrate it, their strength, and to see it be used rather than shut it down because they're not doing it as wise as the old person would. But there's this, again, that place of dishonor going, they don't even know how to run, so I'm not going to let them, or I think they're just running like a bunch of idiots, or whatever. We're actually supposed to recognize from this kind of older generation size that these are the ones that have the strength to run with. And so we want to encourage it. We want to give them running room and bring our wisdom. I'm 41, so I'm riding right in the middle, 40 and below and 50 and below. So I have no problems. It's all the other people. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Look at 1 Kings 12:6. Solomon, the wisest person, the Bible says he's the wisest person to ever live. Now look what he did with his wisdom. He's a real smart guy. 1 Kings 12:6. King Rehoboam, this is Solomon's son, took counsel with the old men who had stood before Solomon his father while he was alive, yet saying, "How do you advise me to answer these people?" So this tells us Solomon in all his wisdom, he's a young man. Solomon's a very young ruler. He's the wisest in his of his old self. He's one of the wisest or is the wisest person. And is his wisdom, he sought out old people and said, tell me what to do. Even though he's the wisest, he honored them. Right? And King Rehoboam said, Dad did real well doing that, I'm doing that. I'm going to honor the wisdom. Mark 6, verse 2. Let's look at this. Look, verse 1, this will help us context. Mark 6, verse 1. Jesus went away from there and came to his hometown, and the disciples followed him. And on the Sabbath, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astonished, saying, "Where did this man get these things? What is this wisdom given to him, and how are such mighty works done by his hands? Isn't this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James, and Joseph, and Judas, and Simon? Are not his sisters here with us?" And they took offense. Jesus said, "A prophet is not without honor, except in his hometown and among his relatives in his own household." He could not do mighty works there, except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief, and he went about the villages teaching. Now here's what happened. Is this group of people said, "Isn't this the kid we all know?" We watched him grow up. Isn't his family here? And isn't his family jacked up? That's what they say. They're like, "Isn't this the son of the carpenter? Isn't this the illegitimate child that was born out of adultery?" And so, as he began to teach, and as he began to say things, rather than honoring him and saying, "We believe that grace could be given to anybody, we're going to make him prove it before we listen." Because we have history in saying, we refuse to honor unless they earn it, right? And who is this? Isn't this one we all know? Isn't this the guy in youth group that was the troublemaker? How could he be anointed to bring a message or even lead? That was me, by the way. I can imagine if you told some of my teachers in high school, if you told some of the people who knew me in my teens and 20s, "Justin is the pastor of a church," they'd go, "Pfft. Yeah, right. That church is going to be a wreck." Now, here's the thing. Jesus tied this to honor. And he says what's missing is they can't value me rightly because of history and because of cultural problems between generations. And because of that, he couldn't even walk out his calling there. He wasn't given permission to. 1 Timothy 5. "Do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as you would a father. Younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters in all purity." Now this is interesting. He says here, you're going to bring correction to an older man. Timothy's a young guy. And he goes, when you do, don't just look at this person as just kind of a normal old person. When you do, put on, just get it in your heart, how would you talk to them if this was a loving, caring father over you? How would you approach it? How would you talk to him? How would you approach it if it was a brother of yours? You're going to bring rebuke or correction to someone your own age. This isn't some stranger on the street. Place honor in your heart. Say, this was my brother who I love and who I grew up. This is my family. I'm going to talk to them, treat them in that way. If you're going to address or rebuke an older woman, Timothy, in the church, as you bring this correction, view that older woman as your mom. How would you treat your mom? This idea of putting honor in our hearts before or keeping it there as we're addressing. Older people, I think it can be addressed across the board. If you're older, you're going to bring a rebuke to a younger. bring it as if this was your own son, who you love and who you want nothing more than the son to succeed, right? So we see this. We see this. They're just a bunch of old guys, or they're just a bunch of young punks, and it's killing us. They weren't here when this church was formed. They don't know what all this stuff. They don't have what we have. No, they don't. But don't you dare dishonor them because of that. You need their strength. They have strength to give. You have wisdom to offer. Young people, if you're running here, you want to actually reach out and say, I need your wisdom. Tell me about the found, you know, this church 20 years ago and all the things the Lord have said so I can run with that wisdom. Tell me about the mistakes you've made and what you've learned and how you've grown, and I want to receive it. Make a place for wisdom. But we can't do this. We can't pit ourselves against one another. All right, dishonoring callings. We also believe there's a pattern of dishonoring the God-given callings in individuals, especially when it comes to callings that we are personally passionate about or value. In other words, this: you generally value the calling that you have, and the other ones are a little bit less. Like, for example, if you're heavily evangelistic, and the evangelist gets up and messages, you go, finally, this church is on board with the Lord. There's an evangelist speaking. Finally, they get it. Enough of this verse-by-verse stuff. Or if you get the prophet who shares, finally, they're valuing prophecy. And we should just always make it about prophecy. Again, there's a wrong balance here. There's an over-honoring and an under-honoring or a dishonor. This particular area of dishonor is most seen and felt in the misappropriation of honor. In other words, too much or not enough honor given to certain giftings or titles. Now, what's interesting about honor, hang with me on this one, because this one hits the church hard. It's dishonor to over-honor, and it's dishonor to under-honor. So, in other words, if you place all the value on, say, one leader or one gifting, then you have dishonored that leader and that gifting. You've dishonored it. You've placed too much value. Okay? And you haven't given value to the other things. Now, obviously, if the weight is there, if the weight says Jesus is to be valued above all, then give him all. You can't over-honor Jesus. But you can over-honor certain giftings and callings. You can over-honor people. And in doing so, you're actually not placing the right weight, the very weight that God places on people. I love this passage. Let's look at this one. 1 Corinthians 3, 2 through 9. I fed you with milk, not solid food, because you were not ready for it, and even now you're not ready. In verse 2, he says, you're still carnal, and you're not mature enough, godly enough to treat people rightly. Look what he says. You're still in the flesh because there's jealousy and strife among you. Are you not of the flesh and behaving only as a human? In other words, you don't have godly honor in the inside. Because one says, I follow Paul, and another says, I follow Apollos. We go, wait a minute, isn't it right to honor Paul? Yep. But when we only honor Paul, and we say it's all Paul, and we don't honor Apollos, or if we do vice versa, he says, you're in dishonor. You're being ungodly. One says, I follow Paul. Another says, I follow Apollos. Are you not being merely human? What then is Apollos? And who is Paul? Servants whom you believed as the Lord assigned to each. My job was to plant, and Apollos was to water. And if you place too much honor on the planting, you don't get watered, and vice versa. I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. So neither is he who plants nor he who waters anything, but only God who gives the growth. In other words, recognize the grace or the gifting given, because God's giving it. He who plants and he who waters are one, and each will receive his wages according to his labor. In other words, honored. They'll be honored rightly if you see them for who they are. We are God's fellow workers. You're God's field, God's building. According to the grace given to me, like a master builder, I've laid a foundation, and someone else is going to build upon it. You need to honor them, just as you've honored me for laying the foundation. Let each take care how he builds upon it. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 12, and we'll kind of wrap this up. But as God is, God arranged the members in the body, each one of them as he chose. If all were a single member, where would the body be? And as is, there are many parts, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And the parts of the body that we think less honorable, we bestow the greater honor, and our unpresentable parts are treated with greater modesty. Which our more presentable parts do not require, but God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lacked it, that there would be no division in the body, but that all the members have the same care for one another. For if one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, all rejoice together. Now here's what he says. Look at the human body. I have presentable parts. I'm presenting them to you today. My hands, my face, I'm not covering them up. There's other parts of me that I'm covered up here this morning. If I were to go to battle, I would cover not my hands and not my face. I'd cover my heart. I'd cover my head. These, though I'm hiding them, I'm covering them because they are vital. Right? I need these parts. That's what he's saying. And he says, when you understand that all your parts, and especially the parts that you don't present a lot of times, the human body, now he's talking about the human body, he goes, these aren't presented parts, but this is your lifeblood. Right? And he goes, if this gets hurt, the whole body dies. So you cover it with great modesty. You protect it. Right? And he says, in the same way, God designed the body that he gave every part of the body, whether it's being presented all the time or whether it's kind of hidden, those hidden parts of the body, those gifts that maybe aren't as public, are to be seen in the same way, to be covered, cared for, honored, just the same as the presentable parts or the parts that are presented. Does that make sense? Because God, I love this, he goes, God in his wisdom placed honor on everyone. And if you dishonor that, if you place greater value on one and not on the other, then you dishonor not only them, but you dishonor God in the way that he made it to function, in his wisdom. And so I'm looking at this going, is this in me? Is this at Restoration Fellowship? Have I done this? Ryan, you can come on up. Now, what do I do if I'm saying, I'm sitting here, I'm all feeling super dishonored. What would I do with that? And I would say, Luke 23 is a place to look. Luke 23:32 through 34. Two others who were criminals were led away to be put to death with him. And when they came to the place that is called the Skull, they crucified him. And the criminals, in other words, what's the value they placed on him as a criminal? They valued him, they honored him as a criminal. Majorly dishonored him, right? Because he's not a criminal. He was sinless. And they murdered him at a place called the Skull, where they murdered the trash. So here's Jesus being fully dishonored. I mean, the level of dishonor. As they spat on him, as they whipped him, as they exchanged his clothes, scorned him. What does he do with that dishonor? Luke 23:34, Father, forgive them. For they don't know what they're doing. And they cast lots to divide his garments. As he's forgiving the dishonor, they continue to do it. I'm telling you guys, we can get so caught up in who owes us an apology that we totally miss what the Lord's trying to do. And I hope those apologies come. I do. They should. But that's not where we want to be this morning. We want to say, am I the one who's casting lots for a garment? Am I the one who's not valuing where I should be? Am I walking in this? Am I looking at that millennial person, an older person, saying, they're just a bunch of punks? Or do I see them? This is the strength that we need. Am I a young person saying, I wish all those people would just get out of the way? They're useless. Or do we do that in our giftings, in our callings, and say, ours is the most important. Ours needs to be honored above all. Ours, whatever gift or calling or passion is. And what happens is factions. Paul says when you do that, he goes, no wonder there's division. No wonder there's factions. It's the old versus the young, and the this ministry versus that ministry, and these leaders versus those leaders. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties. See if there's any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way of everlasting. I want our heart posture to be this. Lord, look at me right now and speak to me the places where dishonor exists. And lead me in the ways that lead to life. In other words, put honor in me. Show me where I'm operating in dishonor. Show me where it exists. And then lead me into life, into honor. Let's use it in that perspective this morning. So I want to give you a minute. I believe the Lord has spoken to us, and this is for our church family, that we'd take a minute right now where Ryan plays and ask this question, God, am I doing this? Have I done it?